fourth case. Reedy versus SMC Corporation. Mr. Slevin?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counselor?
Judge, my name is John Slevin, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant. And I would first point out in this argument that there were three issues that were raised by the defendants in their brief. And I can summarize them by saying, one, whether or not Ann Riggi, the mother of the plaintiff, had a serious health condition. And they said that she did not have one, that she did not convey her condition, and that she could not. And the second issue they said was did Riggi provide sufficient notice of his need for a leave? And the third was whether or not the court was proper in granting a summary judgment on discrimination and retaliation. We conceded the third point, and it's not an issue. We recognize that we did not prove retaliation, discrimination. But on the first issue, we did not show that Ann Riggi had a serious health condition, or could we have if we were asked to? And I think the answer to that is clear. We could have and would have if we were asked. But we were never asked to do that. The facts are clear from the affidavit of the treating physician, who Ann Riggi was under his care, that she had many problems, medical problems. She had a coronary heart problem. She had she was insulin dependent diabetic, and she had other problems that are set forth in that affidavit of the doctor.
Now, Mr. Slevin, because time is always shorter than we think, let me just tell you there are two things about your client's case that concern me. One of them is the question whether he gave adequate notice to SMC and its officials that he was invoking his rights under the Family Medical Leave Act, or that he might be invoking them. In other words, did he kind of get to first base on that point, particularly in light of the fact that he sends the one email, but then for reasons that I don't understand fully, he turns off his company phone for more than a week. And the other thing that worries me is when he does send the email to Mr. King, he's untruthful in part of it. He says that his mother's been in the emergency room, and his mother has not been in the emergency room. So, you know, when all is said and done, if the notice had been okay and everybody had understood, maybe it was just a careless statement. He was afraid he was going to go there. I mean, I don't know, really. But the FMLA can't work if people don't give proper notice. And it seems to me part of proper notice is staying in touch while you're gone.
I agree, Your Honor. But I think in this case, the notice was given and covered the essential points that are required in a notice.
So what do you think SMC should have done when they get this July 12 email that says, I do have vacation time, or I could apply for the Family Care Act, which I do not want to do at this time?
Right.
So
while
what
he still has
should
vacation
they have
time.
Done? Right. I understand your reading of that, and I think the fact that he added the words at this time make it a much more ambiguous statement than the district court thought. But nonetheless, it's really just kind of a future-oriented statement. I might want to go down that path.
Sure.
So what was the company supposed to do on getting that?
I don't think there's any question. The company, when they have a notice that is given to them that may potentially be an FMLA case and required an FMLA leave, they have the responsibility to make further inquiry.
So you think that's when they send the forms and say, here's our FMLA paperwork, you know?
Yes. That's what their own policy requires.
So just to raise, Mr. Slevin, the specter of potential use, should be enough to cause the company to follow up immediately.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Just the specter of potential use of Leave Act, under the Leave Act, should be enough for the company to send out the paperwork.
That's what the law has provided on the many cases where they discuss it.
So you think your case is actually stronger than the ones where people don't mention the Family Medical Leave Act, but nonetheless they've said enough to cause the company to realize that that might be implicated?
Well, I don't know that it's stronger or not. I think, you know, the important part is that he said, hey, my mother was in a coma, and I'm the primary care provider for her, and I've got to go home to take care of her. And this has happened before, but if I can, I think we can resolve the issue that if I can get her in an intermediate care home, it will solve the problem. But I need time off, and that's what he said. I need time off to tend to the needs of my mother.
So how long do you think he was entitled to go without himself initiating a communication of some kind, either an email or a phone call or a letter or something back to the company? Because, in fact, what finally happens on the 19th is Mr. King calls, says, I need to talk to him. He talks to him. He shows up on the 20th, and then he's fired. But he doesn't seem ever to have initiated a communication after that July 12 email.
He did not, but I don't think the law required him to do so. I think
so. But for how long? For 12 weeks? Or for, I mean, there has to be some outer limit.
I think it would be reasonable under the circumstance, and I don't think that it should be decided as a matter of law that he waived his right under the FMLA. He said it's going to take a couple days. And, you know, you asked, well, why did he turn his cell phone off? But that was his procedure and habit. Even while he was working at night, he would turn his cell phone off. And the procedure was, from King, he would call his home phone if he couldn't reach him. And when he did call his home phone, he was told it was taking longer than expected, but he did not ask him, said, hey, I got to talk to him right away, or how long is it going to take, or anything of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it, you know, the burden shifts to the employer in these cases. And, you know, I cited in our brief the Price case that was decided in the circuit. Judge Posner wrote the decision, Price versus City of Fort Wayne. But they specifically set forth that once the employer has notice of a potential FMLA leave, it's their responsibility to take the steps to inquire further to see whether or not it does qualify. And had they done that, it would have clearly qualified, because I don't think there's any question that Mrs. Riggi had a serious health condition. And it was not, you know, something that was going to be gone for a month. So, I mean, he was gone, really. He reported in, or he talked to him. His friend, Chuck Percher, talked to him on Monday following the Tuesday that he left the program. And was told it was taking a little longer than I thought, but when he called on Tuesday, he said, yep, we got the thing taken care of, and I'll be in work tomorrow. I'd also want to add that don't overlook the email that was sent to Jokey. Jokey was not his immediate supervisor, but Jokey was in charge of scheduling the mandatory educational program that he had to go to in Indianapolis, the home office. And on that, he did not make any ambiguous statement. And when taken in its entirety, I think that this never should have been something granted by summary judgment. It should have been decided as a question of fact. And I would say that's what Posner decided in that Price case, when it was a question of whether or not there was a serious health condition. And he said that should be not a question of law, but a question of fact, the trier of fact. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mrs. Swindon?
Button there, you can raise that up.
Thank you.
They're going to raise it up for you.
May it please the court. My name is.
If you hit the button, it'll go.
On your right side.
Inside.
Inside and on your right, it'll go to some desired height.
All right. May it please the court. My name is Dave Swider, and I represent the defendant appellee in this case, SMC Corporation. And I think, Your Honor, you put your finger on the question in this case, the central issue, which is, was there adequate notice given to the employer, SMC, under the circumstances of this case, such that SMC had an obligation to make further inquiry?
And I actually have a question for you about that, too. I mean, I think, as often is the case, there are questions for both sides. It strikes me as quite odd, really, that Mr. Rigi communicates by email to Mr. King on the morning of the 12th and notifies him that he's going to need some time off to care for his mother, you know, brings up the topic of the possible need for the Family Medical Leave Act. And then Mr. King never emails Mr. Rigi back. Email is obviously a method of communication that the parties use, and I can even imagine, taking the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Rigi, that he's really even supposed to turn his company's cell phone off when he's not at work. Sometimes contracts go by numbers of minutes or something, and the company may not want to pay for his personal use of his phone. And there's evidence in the record to show that the parties have a practice of King just calling on the landline if he needs to get him off hours. So I'm troubled at Mr. King's failure to follow up in any of the ways that it seems to me would have worked if Mr. King was all that concerned about pinning down to the minute when Mr. Rigi was going to come back, or at least just saying to him, you know, you've got 4 days of vacation and that's it. You know, you're not using your Family Medical Leave Act. I'm expecting you back on day five. Nothing like that happens.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, but the whole notion that the company had these responsibilities to communicate with Mr. Rigi rather than the reverse, I think, puts the balance on the employer's shoulders to too great a degree.
But why does it on these facts, when the email that he gets isn't like the ones in the other cases that you cited, where the person is adamantly storming around saying, I never want to use the Family Medical Leave Act? He's just saying, right at the moment, you know, I don't want to do this. I do not want to do at this time, that he's triggered the possibility of the Family Care Act. So rather, as he calls it, so rather than just using the most ineffective method of communication there is, why doesn't Mr. King, when he's calling, use some mechanism that's likely to get through, if for no other reason than to say, you know, you're not using the Family Medical Leave Act, and so I expect you back at work as soon as your vacation days expire?
Again, under the facts of this case, there was no responsibility at all, I would say to you, Your Honor, for the company to be in touch with Mr. Rigi. Mr. Rigi says very clearly, I'm going to be gone. I have vacation time. I could apply for Family Care Act, which I do not want to do at this time.
At this time. The
regulations make it clear that it is the employee's responsibility to notify the employer that, number one, I need leave, and number two, what the anticipated duration of that leave is going to be. In this case, Mr. Rigi did just the opposite. He said, I don't want leave. What responsibility at that point is triggered on the employer's behalf, I would say, is none.
Well, wait a minute. He says he's going to use his vacation time, and everybody agrees he's got these 4 days. In fact, he gets paid for the 4 days, which takes us, Wednesday,
sorry.
Thursday, Friday. You paid him for it. So, yes, he had the 4 days, certainly at this stage. And he indicates the nature of what he needs to do, which is to make the intermediate care arrangements for his mother. He says a couple days, but you know, that's he's indicated the purpose of it. I think he's done a lot more than some people have done to trigger this back and forth that is then supposed to go on.
The rule he violated, first of all, said that you have to notify your supervisor. It doesn't say the supervisor has to get in touch with you, let him know when you're going to be absent and why you're going to be absent.
He
did not do that.
Email. If, we all agree on
if you give him the benefit of the doubt relative to the vacation days, he still had a responsibility thereafter to get in touch with the company, not the reverse, and say, now I would like to have FMLA rights, or I'm going to be on leave for a greater period of time. What you're putting on the employer's shoulders in this instance, if you say that the 13 telephone calls to the
cell phone.
Well,
ineffective telephone calls with the cell phone off,
and also,
which is consistent with his practice, according to this record.
Well, at night, it's consistent with his practice. These calls were made at during business hours for the most part.
But he's not at work.
As well.
Is there evidence in the record to show what the company's use of company cell phone policies is?
There is not. Again, we're turning the burden of proof the wrong way if we're going to make it incumbent on the employer to say, okay, I therefore needed to try to email him, I needed to call his home, I needed to use his company's cell phone. Because we did two of those things.
What,
we called his home and we used the cell phone.
Well, I mean, as soon as you call his home, I mean, there's a disputed issue of fact about the conversation of the 17th of July. You say that Mr. King told Percher that Rigi had to call right away. Rigi says, or Percher says, no, that's not what was said. So we have to construe that disputed issue of fact.
Your Honor, even with respect to that, the judge, McDade, said that the plaintiffs admitted that, and in Mr. Riggy's deposition, he says, Chuck, relative to this phone call on the 17th to his home, Chuck Percher told me that Louis had called asking about me.
That's not the same as saying, and call me tomorrow. As soon as he gets that message on the 19th, he does call right away.
Again.
There is ambiguity. No, I thought you went over the line on that one. On the 17th, there's a conversation with Percher. How are things going? That's it.
That is a disputed question.
Which
that has been admitted both by Mr. Riggi and the court legitimately found based on admissions by the plaintiff in the brief. Regardless, again, the responsibility is on Mr. Riggi's shoulders, not on the company's shoulders. And as you suggested at the onset of your questioning to Mr. Slevin, how long could this have gone on? The only reason that we ever heard from Mr. Riggi at all was because of this call on the 17th, and then another call on the 19th that was finally responded to.
How long? I'm only going to go because I think there's a disputed issue of fact about whether there was a request to call Mr. King on the 17th. But the 19th, you're right. There's a that he asks that he be called. He is called right away, and Mr. Riggi shows up on the 20th.
Again, if we're going to.
The question remains about how long can Mr. Riggi go. I don't think it has to be.
Exactly.
That at all,
we've got 13 phone calls. We finally reach him. He never tries to reach us. He clearly was not entitled to FMLA rights in this case. When he denies them in the first place, he doesn't call ever to tell us what his situation is.
He
says that I don't want them at this time. Again, who's it incumbent upon to determine whether he wants FMLA rights or is entitled to them or not? The regulations plainly put that burden on the employee's shoulder to at least give us enough information that we can inquire further. And then, when we inquire further, at least to be there to respond to those questions. There has to be a responsibility for the employee to try to maintain the employment relationship. And
is it a fair read, and if, obviously if it's not, I want you to tell me, is it a fair read to say that his initial communication is, I have an emergency, I want to draw down on the vacation account, but obviously, when that expires, I want to apply for the act. Is that asking too much of what he said?
I think it is. I think looking at even previous cases from this court, it certainly may have been his intent that he didn't want to draw down the FMLA time at all, it's not even clear that he wants to use vacation time. He has 4 days. I don't know how much time he thought he had, but after those days were exhausted,
he should have gotten in touch with the company. There needs to be a balance, again, between employee protections and employer rights to have some understanding as to when somebody's going to be at work, how long they're going to be absent. There was never any conveyance of that other than I'll be gone a couple of days, twice in that email, a couple of days.
Sure. Interestingly, the company didn't think he was going to be working for them during any of that two-week period because what you thought he was going to be doing was being in Indianapolis getting trained. So, I mean, that is the fact. I mean, he wasn't there because of his mother's emergency, but no one was relying on actual work from him during that two-week period.
I'm not sure that's true either. He generally worked.
He generally worked from home.
We knew he wasn't going to be in Indianapolis.
You had scheduled him for Indianapolis. I'm just saying you'd scheduled him for Indianapolis for those 2 weeks, right?
Yes, but that training was going to be rescheduled. He asked for it and it was told to him.
After the fact, though, I'm just saying planning in advance, you knew he wasn't going to be working during that 2 weeks.
He knew it was going to be rescheduled. We knew it was going to be rescheduled. He worked from home, so he could have been working from home. He didn't.
I don't think you're addressing my point, but that's all right. It's okay.
What is the product of SMC?
Pneumatic machinery. And he was in sales capacity. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Slevin?
Service far and beyond the call of duty. Judge, I would again call the court's attention to the to this Price case, which was decided in this circuit, and is directly contrary to the position that Mr. Swiford has alleged here today. And I'll read from part of that. And it's curious because the defense in the Price case was that the person should not be given a FMLA leave because when they fill the papers out, they ask for a paid leave only, and therefore they waive their right under an FMLA leave. And the court wrote, the city, which is the city of Fort Wayne, contends that by asking for paid leave only, but not for an unpaid leave, Price, the plaintiff, foreclosed the inference that she might be interested in an FMLA leave. But the Department of Labor regulations repeatedly emphasize that it is the employer's responsibility to expressly assert rights. Excuse me, the employer's responsibility to determine the applicability of the FMLA and to consider the requested leave as an FMLA leave. That's the employer's responsibility. For example, and it quotes from the Code of Federal Regulations 825, period 303B, the employee need not expressly assert rights under the FMLA or even mention the FMLA, but only state that leave is needed. The employer will be expected to obtain any additional information.
Mr. Levin, let me ask you this. Suppose we have an employee who has the family emergency.
Sure.
And says, I have an emergency, and I have to take leave. That's all. Even less than what we have here, right? With no reference to the FMLA. That's enough?
Well,
just
I don't think so.
A phone call that I have an emergency, I need to be off.
I don't think so. Because I think there was a case that, was questioned, the employer called in sick. And she said, I'm sick. And then the question was whether or not she qualified for an FMLA. On the facts you just gave, if she said, I have an emergency because my mother needs my help right now and she has a serious health problem and she had a coma last night and I have to go attend her needs, that is enough. Because I think you have to
You focus on that seriousness. I don't, at least for me, I don't think there's that's such an issue. I'm accepting the accuracy of that representation of the illness of the mother. It's that's certainly the legitimate basis for the call.
Right.
It's what more is needed, and I guess that it is just the potential for the Leave Act to trigger enough. Once, well, that's my question. So you just if Mr. Rigge calls in and says I've got this continuing and now exacerbated problem with a parent, and I need to take some time. That's all he says. Should the supervisor then be prepared to look at his leave status for that column, you know, the vacation time, and say, my God, he's got 4 days, so if it sounds serious to me, that is me, supervisor, and so after 7 days, I better send some paperwork out. Is that the requirement we want to pose on the employer?
Yes, I think we do, because that's what the regulations, that's not what you want to impose or we want to impose.
No,
I think that's what the law imposes.
Well, we want to impose what the law tells us to impose. I appreciate that. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.